Well, welcome to Stop the Presses here on the 5th of March, Friday, March 5th, 2021. Welcome, everybody, to this show, Stop the Presses, here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. It runs Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central, 3 to 4 Eastern. I've been doing the show since latter 2018 here for John Stattmiller's Spine Network. Make sure you donate to RBN as we try to overtake the mass media cartel. Now, I was just recently, February 26-27, at the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association's conference in the Woodlands, a nice place near Houston, and I had the honor of meeting Michael Peruca. I had heard of him before he ever heard of me, that's for sure, and he was a Constitution Party presidential candidate in 04, and he's a noted scholar and thinker, and I really enjoyed getting to meet him. He's my guest today, and I got a video from him. I watched this, Michael, prior to today's show very intently, the case against case law, and you clarified later it's actually the case against case law method. Is our legal system really legal? And I watched it A to Z really carefully, and it clarified a lot of things that I've been wondering about for a long time, and I suspect that's true for the RBN listening audience, Michael. But welcome to the show.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for your hospitality, and it's great to be on RBN. Thank you very much.
Yes, yes. I've watched the Constitution Party, a footnote over the years. You had Chuck Baldwin as a candidate, Daryl Castle, Don Blankenship, and others. Bill Moore up in Michigan is a fixture there for the U.S. Taxpayers Party, which is a Michigan affiliate of the Constitution Party. And I've covered a lot of their events where the mainstream media will not even show their face. Isn't that just the way it is with the duopoly? But we won't talk about political parties today, although the big tent of the Republicans really should be broken up. There should be other parties involved. They should be given fair ballot access. And on and on and on. The real voter fraud is when you get to the booth to vote before a vote is cast or counted. You're just only then learning about who all is on the ballot. The media didn't tell you. And that's if you're a minor party. That's if you got the ballot access to begin with. And if you maintain it, if you ever were granted that access. So the two dominant parties in the duopoly really, really rigged the game before any votes are cast or counted. So that's something to think about before we worry about the miscounting or fraud in elections themselves. But that's another subject for another day. Now, the case against case law, let's get into this. I'll start you out just by laying a basic foundation. This basically replaced the Bible as the source of law, and it moved that source to something else. You can take it from there.
Well, thank you very much. And by the way, with respect to that duopoly you talked about, you nailed it. You said that better. You expressed that better than I think I could repeat it. But my experience bore that out on two important points. One is that the two very difficult things for a third party are to get ballot access and to get major media coverage. The ballot access, of course, is the rules for ballot access are made up by Democrats and Republicans. So they obviously don't like very much competition. And the other thing that people don't generally, I think, realize is that when you run in a national election like that, you're running in 50 different elections. There's different rules in each state. Just knowing what the rules for ballot access are and the different hoops that they make you jump through, just knowing the rules is a full-time job, much less adhering to them and navigating through them. And then, of course, major media coverage. You spend most of your time and money getting ballot access and trying to get advertising. And so it's very difficult for third parties, and as you correctly pointed out. But thank you for talking about the case against the case law method, because I think this is at the heart of many, many problems in America today. Mark, there is a paucity, a dearth of understanding of what law is and where law comes from and who makes law. As you know from one of the things I said in that talk this recently that you referenced in the Woodlands, Texas, to the Sheriff's Association, one of the problems is we really don't know what law is because law is not taught in law schools. Constitutional law and the kind of understanding of what law is, the source and nature of law that would have been understood and was understood by our founders, Mark, including Jefferson, Adams, Madison, the father of the Constitution, the way that those men looked at law and understood what it was is not what is taught in law schools. Actually, a revolution has happened in America, and I say it's happened, it's over, it's done, it happened, that has changed the way people think and see law. And it began in Harvard Law School back in the 1880s. And as you referenced, our founders would have looked the ultimate source of law as God himself. God is the ultimate source of law. Blackstone was a very well-known figure, thinker and writer, an authority for our founding fathers. He, of course, wrote the commentaries on the laws of England about a half a generation before our founders came along. And he was, he was very influential. And he explained in his commentaries on the laws of England that he called all man-made law municipal law. That is to say, all our constitutions and all our statutes and all our ordinances, etc. He would have categorized all that as what he called municipal law. And what he said was, if municipal law is not in harmony with the divine law, that is to say, God's law, and what Jefferson later called the law of nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence, he was actually paraphrasing Blackstone. Blackstone said, if man's law, municipal law, is not in harmony with God's law, then it's not law. Then it's not law, and we shouldn't call it law. But as I say, that's the way they understood it. But this revolution happened in the 1880s, principally began in Harvard Law School under the direction of a man named Christopher Columbus Langdell. And Langdell introduced a method of understanding law which jettisoned the whole idea of it coming from God and having a divine nature and anything that's law having to be in harmony with God's law. And what he said was law evolves, and this was a Darwinian understanding, and the Darwinian theory had a lot to do with this. He said law evolves, and the way it evolves is that we look to the cases. We look to the cases that are the opinions that are written by judges, and we give that the status. We raise that to being the source of law, as opposed to law being the source of law being God and his word. So that twist or subversion, perversion of the law is carried out through the generations since 1880s in law schools. I went to law school at the University of Baltimore. There's two law schools in my state, University of Baltimore and University of Maryland. And this is the way I was taught, quote unquote, the law. You might call it unlaw. That's what Chief Justice Roy Moore called it, the unlaw. I was taught unlaw. And Mark, I have to admit, at that time in my life, I didn't question it at all. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I just bought it. And it wasn't until later in my life, through the intervention of some other very influential people in my life and some other reading, et cetera, And I came to the understanding that was phony, that was false. Dare I say, fake law? That was so. We have gone through this revolution, and it has affected all areas of study. But it has certainly affected the law, where we have come to look at it really in an upside down way. Lawyers study unlaw, and as you know, I mentioned to the sheriffs that I said the last person you want to listen to is your county attorney, because the trouble with your county attorney is that he went to law school and he was trained this way. So it's a huge problem, Mark.
Yeah, there's irony there. The problem with attorneys is they go to law school. There's just something unavoidably ironic and humorous about that. Hey, Mr. Attorney, you went to law school. Well, I'm going to go talk to somebody else. But yes, you know, you listed a lot of these influential figures. Langdell, I think, was the first one you mentioned, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's another one I looked up. He didn't happen to come up in your case law, video, The Case Against Case Law, but I think that you'd probably agree that Roscoe Pound was another one.
Sure, he followed in the footsteps, I think, of Oliver Wendell Holmes and others. And he was a progressive. He was, I would call all those men revolutionaries that wanted to undo, and they wanted to undo the reference. And they wanted, basically what they wanted to do is undo the acknowledgement of God and his authority and disconnect it from the study of law.
Yeah, it says in here of Pound, he advocated, quote, the adjustment of principles and doctrines to the human conditions they are to govern, rather than assumed first principle.
Yes.
There it is, right there.
Right.
He wanted to get rid of first principles. Well, first principles includes the God-given rights, the godly roots of rights and of our very existence, for that matter. So first principles, that's obviously what it meant, to get rid of those first principles.
Well, just think about that logically or illogically for a second, if you will, Mark. If you get rid of first principles, then what do you replace them with? Other principles that you now consider to be first? And then there, you know, this is like, what's that comic strip, Pogo, where it said we have met the enemy and they are us, right?
Yeah.
So if you get rid of first principles, what do you replace them with? You're calling something else a first principle, and then you get rid of that because it's a first principle. I mean, what this is this evolutionary idea applied to law, which again, as we said, abandons the authority of God and says that authority comes from man. Well, we're in trouble.
Yeah, and as you said on your The Case Against Case Law video, very clearly is when you do that, you've left the moorings. You no longer have your ship tied up at a secure dock. So now you're out on the choppy waters of jurisprudence based on man's law. And once you're out on those choppy waters and those shifting sands, then naturally at some point, the idea that Roe v. Wade in 73 could be called law, and that not only that, but be called law and then say that legalized the killing of the preborn. I mean, those are just a complete butchering of logic and language and conceptual thinking to begin with. But this is where this heads, where it leads. All of a sudden, you're justifying something that not long ago would have been considered absolute barbarism, and now it's legal. So this is what happens when you detach from God's law. I mean, ultimately, that's where it takes you.
Yes. And that's what we've seen. Just think of the topsy turvy, the illogic of relying on man, and saying that courts make law. If you want to know what a court thinks, tune into. I mean, courts say anything. They've backed up on themselves. They've overruled themselves. There's different rulings in different jurisdictions, et cetera. So to rely on that is to rely on, as you say, no moorings. You're starting with no moorings, and so you're no foundation. You're tethered to nothing. So you're always in midair, and that's where that's people who want to abuse and misuse and the quote legal unlegal system. To assert their power over others will use that and can use that. It weaponizes law, and it just comes down to the, you know, might is right.
And we've seen that elsewhere. You know, the weaponization of the monetary system through the Federal Reserve, and the weaponization of media by the mass media cartel, where the media no longer reports but goes after people and seeks character assassination. It seeks to blackmail people. It seeks to, call them into disrepute rather than report honestly and fairly across the board. So before we had fake news, we had fake law, and you're explaining very clearly why. We got about, 4 minutes or so, 4 minutes and some change before the first break. Then there's a short segment. Then there's a few more ads at the bottom of the hour, and then it's smooth sailing to the end, Michael. But yeah, the consequences of this, we're only still realizing just how bad the consequences can be of always being in midair, always hopping along on one leg and never having a solid foundation to what we're doing in law and so many other endeavors in human society.
Well, if you look at Psalm 2, Mark, this problem, I think, is pretty well laid out in Psalm 2. Why do the nations rage? Why do the heathens rage? Why are we murdering babies? Why are we engaged in wars for empire? Why are things all messed up? Well, the judges and the rulers of the earth have taken counsel against the Lord. They've gathered together, taken counsel against the Lord, and they said, we're going to cast off these bonds that connects us to him. We're going to cast these bands away. We don't need God's law and God's word. We got this. We can figure this out ourselves. We'll do it alone. We'll do it without him. Well, it doesn't turn out very well. As Psalm 2 goes on to say, it says the God in his heaven will laugh in derision. It's not like he's not laughing and patting you on the head saying, there's a cute little kid. He says that he's going to break them like a potter's vessel with a rod of iron. That's what we suffer. That's what we suffer. And Psalm 2, I think, lays it out. And the reason is the rulers and the judges of the earth have disconnected themselves, just as we talked about in this revolution in law. They've disconnected themselves to God and his word. That is to say, from reality. They've disconnected themselves from what is real. They're acting out these passions and desires in a surreal way. And the ending is smithereens from and we'll learn that we'll have that eternally, and we'll also have it temporally. We suffer because of it very, 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 very much. And it makes me appreciate what our founders did put into place, and the faithfulness and the strength and solidarity they showed in putting it into place is a massive accomplishment in the human condition.
Yeah, these revolutionaries have had a lot of success, although, as you've indicated, ultimately it will be for naught for them. But, you know, you hear this thing batted around, and we'll get more into the flow of what you have in the case against case law in your video, and we'll tell people how to get it as well. But this thing that you see batted around, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before the break at the most, is stare decisis. And it almost seems like stare decisis, which seems to be a reference to case law, is supposed to be the dominant thing, or at least the main thing that judges should look at. It seems like, Michael, that everybody that wants to be a Supreme Court justice is asked almost like they have to pass a test. What do you think of stare decisis? We got about 60 seconds, but it's almost like if you're not totally on board with that legal theory, then you're somehow not fit to be a Supreme Court justice. Am I misinterpreting that?
No. That's what they're trying to purify. Well, purify is probably the wrong word. They're trying to make sure that anybody they put in this position does not have first principles. They want to make sure that anybody they put in this position is subject to this Darwinian revolution.
Okay, very good. We'll be back with more from Michael Peruca. Stay tuned.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Every day we roll from town to town. We see another mom, papa just getting shut down. And it's the same five stores everywhere we go. And it's the same damn music on the radio.
Welcome back to Stop the Presses here on Friday, March 5th, 2021. My guest, Michael Peruca, who's with the Institute on the Constitution, right, Mike? Isn't that the name?
Correct.
Yeah, that's who produced the video that I watched before I did this show today, The Case Against Case Law, or The Case Against the Case Law Method, you might say, ladies and gentlemen. Is our legal system really legal? This is the main topic today. And we're into that short segment, Michael, before the bottom of the hour, then a few more ads, then it's smooth sailing from there. But just to put a little capstone on what we talked about with Stare Decisis and all these congressmen, particularly Dianne Feinstein and others in the Senate, who grill all these would-be jurists for the Supreme Court. And they always ask them about Stare Decisis. And as you clarified, that's to make sure that they're being filtered so no one with first principles get in there. You know what struck me about that, Michael? I was thinking about that during the break. They would say, well, if you're into first principles, that means you're biased, you know, that you're predisposed toward a certain point of view. But if you don't have first principles, then, you know, you're going to fall for anything that comes along. You're going to be extremely subjective in your thinking because you have no basis on which to judge anything, at least no basis to judge it soundly. So really, extremely subjective and biased views would be much more likely to come up in the absence of first principles than with them, in my mind. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right, because when you're talking about, Mark, when you talk about where does law come from, one of the questions is, does law change? Does law change? How do you know? How do you know where it comes from? Because the answer to these questions, or ones like them, have to do with, where's your beginning point? Where do you start? And our founders had this problem. They had a king. They had a king who was breaking the law. They had a parliament that was trying to enforce acts of legislation on them that they had no authority to do. They said, you have no authority upon us to tax us. with the Stamp Act, the Tea Act, the Townsend Acts, the Intolerable Acts. But so they listed all these arguments or these complaints. Basically, the Declaration of Independence is a list of complaints, 27 complaints against the King and Parliament. But if that's all it was, Mark, then it would be lost to history. You wouldn't know about it, and I wouldn't know about it. If it weren't for the argument that they made on the first page, in the first couple sentences, that because they said, wait a minute, there's a lawgiver above the king that the king has to pay a duty to. In other words, if you've got 27 arguments against, complaints against the king, but he's the ultimate lawmaker, what does it matter if you've got 27 or 127 or 8,027? It doesn't make any difference. Right. Because you're dealing with the sovereign authority. But they said, wait a minute, there's a lawgiver above the king and the king's not paying attention to him. So therefore, based on that, that presupposition that there's a God and our rights come from him and the purpose of civil government is to protect God given rights. That was the legal argument they made. Now, over time, courts and fake news, et cetera, and our culture. And what we talked about with Christopher Columbus Langdell at Harvard University, what they've done is kicked out that first presupposition. They've kicked out that there is that what they're saying is there is no lawgiver above the king. And that, now they're saying judges and executives are kings. Because if there's no lawgiver. So we have to make and understand and articulate the very same argument that our founders did. And it begins with the acknowledgement of God's authority. Modernists and postmodernists like to say that the expressions of these foundational principles are quaint and old-fashioned and outmoded. And our founders are a bunch of dead white guys, right?
Right.
And we don't have to – and we've evolved past that stupid, ancient, unenlightened methodology. We're more informed than that. Well, really? Well, how's that working out for you? How's that seem to be working out? So, you know, at the bottom, at the core of the American view of law and government, foundationally, is this idea that there is an almighty God, an unmoved mover, and our rights come from him, and it's the purpose of civil government to protect and defend those rights. It's not government's job to make sure you're wearing your seatbelt or make sure you're eating your veggies. Or, by the way, it's not government's job to make sure you're healthy or to protect your health. It's their job to protect your liberty so you can protect your health. And so when you kick out that underlying, if there's no God, then there's no God-given rights, Mark.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. We got about 60 seconds or less before the break, bottom of the hour, then it's smooth sailing, like I said. Very interesting, Michael. Yeah, clearly, once you kick enough legs out from under the stool won't stand. And as you indicated, how's it working out? Well, it's working out terribly. That's how it's working out. Nobody knows what right and wrong is anymore. The most heinous things are done, such as abortion, and treated like a civil right, and things like that. And again, just a couple, a few generations ago, people would have been aghast. But a very interesting discussion. We'll be back with much more from Michael Peruca. Stay tuned.
Smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted, long-term, storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Day it is today, Friday, March 5th, 2021. My guest, Michael Peruca. I mentioned at the beginning of the show here on RBN that I met him at the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association's event, a conference held at the Woodlands, a very nice place near Houston, Friday, February 26th, and Saturday, February 27th. Those were the main days. And I'll mention, Michael, it's probably true that case law properly used is not always a bad thing if the case being cited was ruled or adjudicated on sound principles and done fairly and constitutionally. So, in other words, case law can be a tool when used properly, but it cannot be the source of law. Would that be a fair and accurate distinction to make?
Yeah, that's very well said. That's exactly the point. Precedent properly understood and properly applied has a value to courts. In other words, courts hear similar sets of facts and make decisions on similar sets of facts all the time. The same right. kinds of things happen over and over again. My tree falls on your house. My ox gets into your pasture, right? And does damage. So the same kinds of things happen over and over again, and the idea of precedent is that we have a settled way of dealing with a certain set of facts, so long as it is consistent with God's law, then that's the way we're going to do it. And it's not up to a judge someday who says, "Well, I like trees, and I don't care where they fall, and even if there was a." Let's say even if the set of facts was that it should have been my fault because the tree was dead and I should have brought it down before it fell into your yard, I'm liable. And a judge comes along and says, "Well, you know, I don't know. I'm an environmentalist. homeless, and I like trees. I don't care where they fall. It's nobody's fault. It's not his job. He needs to stick by the established precedent, so long as that precedent is quote unquote lawful, and that is to say harmonious with the higher moral law. But if we find that a previous decision is not harmonious with the law, then it shouldn't be followed because, in fact, it's not law. Blackstone spoke about this, wrote about this, I should say, and this is a little wordy, but let me try to read this and see if you can understand it. He says,
"Okay, we have one caller in a few minutes. We'll get to a caller, but go ahead."
Okay, sure. He says, "For it is an established rule to abide by former precedents where the same points come again in litigation. As well as to keep the scales of justice even and steady and not liable to waver with every judge's opinions." So it's helpful to keep things settled and to decide things the way we decided them before. But he says, "Yet this rule admits of exception where the former determination is most evidently contrary to reason." That's the law of nature. "Much more if it be contrary to the divine law." The law of nature is God. Right. So Blackstone is saying it's okay to use precedent as an argument, as evidence of the law. That is to say, here's how a previous tribunal ruled on this previous set of facts. And therefore, this tribunal with a similar set of facts should rule the same way. However, that doesn't apply if the previous opinion or determination was not in harmony with the higher moral law, with God's law, with the law of nature and nature's God, that is to say, the Bible. So there is an argument to be made that precedent is valuable in an argument, but it's not the source of law. It's just evidence of what the law, and it's an argument, it provides an argument of what the law ought to be now. But what the law ought to be now is what the law always has been and always will be. And that's based on God's law. And Blackstone makes that pretty clear. He uses language that's a little foreign to us, but that's what he's saying there. And that is the way our founders understood law until this period in history where Christopher Columbus Langdale and Harvard University began to look for the source of law in the cases, the case law method. The case law method is a methodology of teaching which is against the law.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a very important and I think well-explained distinction you made. And I would add, before we take a call from John in California, I would add that you could have a string of rulings that are cited in legal precedent, but each time a ruling is made dealing with a similar set of circumstances, that over time it could slightly go off course and then a little bit more off course and then a little bit more off course. And So over the course of decades, or maybe even a century and a half or something, you go to all these legal precedents, you cite all these previous cases, and slowly but surely, there's similarities, but there's just enough differences too to where the legal precedent isn't a straight line, and instead it just kind of wanders away off course, away from God's law, bit right. by bit by bit. And so it might look like a consistent set of rulings, but in fact there's a little tweak and a little difference between each one of them, between each one of the rulings. And a lot of people would paper over that, not call attention to it or ignore it or be ignorant of it. And they don't realize that each case looks a lot similar, but in fact, there's little differences that move us away more from first principles.
Yes. As a matter of fact, another way that we like to say that, Mark, is let's say you and I are facing each other and you tap me on the left shoulder with your right hand. And you move me a degree, and then you tap me again, you move me a degree, and you tap me again until at some point I'm facing 180 degrees from where I was facing. And at some point now you're killing 60 million babies.
Exactly. You just kind of wander away from first principles. The next thing you know, it's like one time I went to a park and I watched a large tortoise and it walked really slowly. I turned around, had a hot dog, not even that, half a hot dog. Said something to a friend. I turned around. That tortoise was 75 yards away.
Bit by bit.
Yeah, bit by bit. Next thing you know, it's across the park, at least 50 yards if it was the foot. So I think we have a caller, John from California. You still there, John? Thanks for holding.
Yeah, I'm still here. Hi, Mark and Mike. This may seem a little unrelated, but maybe it is related in some way. This is going to Romans 13, which a lot of biblical scholars are kind of hit us over the head, with having to obey our authorities pretty much everything that they tell us to do, except for maybe the exception of something dealing with conscience, you know. And so one of the justifications they make is Israel, when they were under the yoke of Rome, you might make the case that Rome was a sort of a tyrannical government, and yet they had to submit. Maybe you can speak to that.
Sure. I think Romans 13 is frequently misunderstood and frequently used in an evil way. Romans 13 talks about rulers. Who's the rulers in America? Who do you take an oath to? What do you take an oath to? What rules? What do we pledge allegiance to when we take an oath in America? We don't pledge allegiance to a president or a governor or a health department official. We pledge allegiance to the Constitution.
Exactly.
So in America, in fact, we are the rulers. We don't have rulers. We have representatives who we delegate enumerated and limited powers to carry out that Constitution that we're committed to. That's the contract between us and our representatives. But take Romans 13, and every time you read the word ruler, think of the people. Don't think of the president or the governor. We think of Romans 13 frequently, and many pastors, many preachers do this. We think of it totally upside down. Yes, you should be afraid of the rulers, but because they're ministers of God to you for good. Now think about that in the inverse way that you normally think about it, which is, I believe, is the proper way. It is the representative, whether he's a congressman or a president or a chief or a county executive or a mayor, that needs to fear the rulers, which is the people.
Okay.
I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, John. Very good question. Enabled Michael to explain something that I've also wondered about a long time, Romans 13. And again, Michael, you're batting 1,000 here. You really helped me with case law, and you're really helping me with Romans 13. When they talk about our rulers or leaders, the rulers and leaders are the people. We don't have a king or a governor or anyone else, any potentate that we swear sovereignty to. They all swear sovereignty to the Constitution. We're in charge. So if Romans 13 says anything, it says that we're in charge and that everything has been looked at backwards and upside down. So very well put, and this is really a clarifying show, just like when I watched your video, The Case Against Case Law. Man, that really kicked the football through the goalpost for me. We also have a couple other callers. Murr from Wisconsin, taking them in the order received. Go right ahead.
Greetings, yes. I think this lockdown has some blessings in disguise, and one of them is so many of these staged events are not taking place now, and they were, in my eyes, and I think if we were to be held to it, were being used to set precedent and eventually bring in Noahide laws. And also, I wanted to say, in appeals court, you can't bring in new law, but you can use case law. Correct?
Yeah, case law is argued in appeals courts. Yes, sure.
What do you think about the Noahide law thing?
I'm sorry, I don't understand that. What word you're saying? What kind of law?
Well, Noahide. Do you know about the Noahide laws?
I'm sorry, you're stumping me there. Yeah, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay, it's a 102-104, it's Education Day for Rabbi Schneerson, But every president signs on to it, and some try to poo-poo it as just being like an ice cream day or a cheese day or whatever, as I was told. But that is not the case. So, yeah, looking to Noah Hyde laws, I'd like to hear what you have to say. I was just looking at the Ooh Wiki, and Pat Buchanan was thinking of voting for you, he said, on the Mudstream Media back in 2004. That's pretty interesting. I guess that scared a few people, probably. But I think
it was interesting that did get some play. Pat Buchanan was on, I think, with Chris Matthews, the Hardball with Chris Matthews.
Yeah.
And Chris Matthews asked him who he would vote for president, and he said, "Well, I might vote for Peruca," and that caused a little stir because they said, "Well, who's he?" Because of course, when you run as a third party, you're not mentioned. That's the way they deal with you. They omit your candidacy from the news network, and so people don't know about you. That's a tactic used to get by the major media. But by the way, your question also made me think. I'm not sure if this is directly responding, and I apologize for not understanding what exactly your question was there. But one thing that you talked about blessings in disguise. I know I prayed for and wished and prayed and hoped for years that the public schools would close.
Yeah.
But they would. Yeah. They were closed. And yep. and I thought, wow, you know, God works in strange ways. But all these people that are clamoring for the schools to reopen, I'm not one of them. I'm not in that group. I'm happy that the schools are closed. That is to say, they have been the vehicle of our destruction and the indoctrination of our children against their values.
Yeah, there's a lot of homeschooling around here in Christians, and they, you know, they have social groups and get together and, you know, learn together, and they'll have like a special person that'll come in and teach them a form of math that they, you know, out in the open, right? A practice.
And they're in the company of other, Americans like Thomas Jefferson, who was homeschooled mm-hmm. by George Wythe and others, and James Madison. All our founders were homeschooled.
Well, John Kennedy, he hardly went to school at all because he was ill. So he read what he wanted to read, and he learned and taught himself. And that is the ideal way, is to be, you know, what your calling is. Find what your calling is. So, but
very
yes,
good,
thank
Mary.
You very. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Real quick, Michael, the Noahide laws, basically in Judaism, the seven laws of Noah, otherwise referred to as the Noahide laws, are part of a set of imperatives which, according to the Talmud, were given by God as a binding set of universal moral laws for the sons of Noah. I think some people claim that those could be used in a negative way to basically rule the world in a non-Christian manner or a tyrannical manner. Others don't think so, and they think that they're more harmless than that, but that's basically what they are.
Thank you. That was outside of my tin there, my Ken. I'm sorry. I wasn't familiar with that.
Moving on, Michael, we got some callers here. This is a good topic. I kind of figured we'd get some. Betty from North Carolina, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Ray, go ahead.
Okay. You are very good in talking about the principles and the like preconditions of Bible laws that applies through all the ages. I wonder if you have a few presuppositions that for the not just the laws, but for God's whole purpose for his works through all of history, just some maybe three or four presuppositions that would be necessary?
Well, I think the very first presupposition is an acknowledgement of God's authority, power, and omniscience. I think God's authority is the very first thing that has to be acknowledged, not only by us individually, but by the governments that we form by the consent of the governed. And then, you know, it's funny, you know what you reminded me of? My dad once said to me, my dad was a very quiet man, but he said some things to me that were very profound at certain times. One time he said, "Michael, there's really only two things you need to learn. The first thing is that there is an almighty, everlasting, eternal God of the universe. The second thing you need to learn is you're not him. And if you learn those two things and apply them, then you'll recognize, and I think my dad was right, I think if there's an almighty God and I'm not him, well, then he probably, since he created me, requires something of me. And it's my duty to figure out what that is and be about it. So that I think is in response to your idea, your question about presuppositions. I think that's an important presupposition for us to remember.
Presupposition the Trinity?
Well, yes, because yes, I do. As a matter of fact,
and
the Bible, yes. I think that the truth
and
of it
the and exclusiveness. There may be a war going on, you know, for the control of the kingdoms of this world. Might those be the suppositions?
Based on God's, they're containing God's word, yes.
Okay, well, I thank you for taking my call and dealing with it.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks a lot, Betty. Wow, we're getting a lot of callers today, Michael. I kind of thought that would happen. We got about, at best, 6 good minutes left before we start hearing the Hark, I Hear the Cannon Roar music to take us out of here.
I'll be brief.
You okay with a couple more calls?
Sure. I'll be brief as...
Yeah, we'll have to keep it brief, ladies and gentlemen. I have to take them in the order received and be as fair as I can. Charles from the St. Pete area in Florida. Are you still there?
Hey, how
is
you
Charles
doing?
Good. Yeah, we've got 2 more callers and not much time, so go right ahead.
I'll try to be brief. One friend of mine years ago, he was Polish. He was a paralegal and a veteran, 100% service-connected veteran. He was telling me about his analysis of American law, that you have constitutional law, but you have also common law, which we inherited from England, where the justices, if they want to overcome a constitutional law and nullify it, they just simply refer back to somebody like the Chief Justice of England in 1630, Chief Justice Cook, or spelled C-O-K-E, who made many references that are true about Magna Carta, but false things too. You're referring back to people that are under kings. So, they were the representative of monarchs, no matter how beneficent, like Charles I could have been thought of as being a king that believed in divine right, but was still beneficent,
right.
Or Charles II, but still, what you're referring back to it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sure. Well, you're right about the common law. As a matter of fact, Blackstone's major work was Commentaries on the Laws of England, which was a compilation and a codification, if you will, of the common law of England. So that's what Blackstone is based on. And again, that's kind of a codification of the experience of the English people. And yes, they were under kings, but Magna Carta and another very, very influential and watershed documents were efforts of the English people to restore the what they consider to be their ancient and inviolate rights. So that's what happened at Runnymede in 1215. The common law underscores, the common law is not in conflict at all, as far as I understand, with the constitutional law or laws made in pursuance of the Constitution.
Thanks, Charles.
Well,
we're going to have to move
the whole idea of the 13th.
Thanks, Charles. I appreciate your call very much. And moving on, we got a couple more callers. I don't think we can get them both under the wire, but taking them in order, James from Vancouver, you'll have to be brief if you're still there.
Yep, I'm here. England never had a constitution to begin with. So common law is basically case law. And wasn't it Amy Coney Barrett who said, when asked about the Constitution, she said, well, I'm a traditionalist, right? And you saw how that worked out. So these judges are receiving pressure, and there's nothing to be done about it until society wants to change, you see.
You're right.
I guess common, I don't have to
know. Common law is...
I'll call you back next time.
Thank you. The common law is based on case law. It is. But it's case law that is not considered to be the source of law, but in harmony with the ultimate law.
Well put. We have one more caller. We'll try and go for the wire here. Tom, I hate to give you a short amount of time from Utah. If you're still there, ask a quick question.
That's me. I just wanted Michael to call me. I'm a friend of Frank Flukiger. This is Tom Rogers in Utah. Michael, go to gassingamerica.com and call me and Frank. Remember us with Valley Forge? I think it was 2002 or 3 that we met.
Yes, Frank's a good friend. Haven't talked to him in years. Say that website again.
Gassingamerica.com, or easier one is poisoningthepoor. Poisoningthepoor.com. I paid the price for testifying in D.C. I was blinded in D.C. for that. Anyway, take a look at that and then give me a call. And call Frank.
Be happy to get up. Yes,
in fact,
sir.
I
thank you,
Frank, if you're being on the radio right now.
Thank you very much. It's good to, it would be good to talk to you and to Frank again as well. Thank you.
Well, great. Thank you, callers out there, for asking some challenging and enlightening questions and questions that enabled Michael to really flesh this issue out. And thanks, Michael, for being on the show. We're going into the last minute or so. As I say, the music's coming up. Hark, I hear the cannon roar. About 20 seconds, but how do you get the case against case law? You can just go to the Institute on the Constitution. What's the website there, Michael? Do you know what I'm...
You could type in Institute on the Constitution, or you could type in TheAmericanView.com. TheAmericanView.com.
TheAmericanView.com.
Right. And there we have courses of instruction in the United States Constitution. We're developing courses of instruction for the Constitution of every state, which is, we're in the middle of that project. It's very important. And we have many materials like the case against case law method. And we have other materials that I think you'll find helpful, and I hope you do. And thank you very much, Mark, for your wonderful hospitality.
Yeah, thank you too, Michael, for being on the show. I learned a lot in the last few days meeting you, watching this video, talking about these matters. It really cleared things up for me. And I'm always learning just like you are. So thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for the next show here at republicbroadcasting.org. And we'll see you after the weekend here on Stop the Presses. Have a great weekend.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.